So I'm going to call the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Information Technology to order for May 26th. And Sean, you want to tell us what we've got on the agenda?
Certainly. Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, for today's IT subcommittee meeting, we have two items, or two agencies, the Department of Revenue and the Oregon State Treasury. They're going to come forward and talk about several of their information technology projects that are proposed within their agencies' respective budgets. First up, we have the Department of Revenue, and then midway through, Bob and I will switch, as per usual. Oregon State Treasury is an agency under his oversight.
Okay.
So first up, we have Department of Revenue.
So come on up and proceed however you're prepared to do that.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. My name is Eric Smith, and I'm the administrator of the Program Management Office for the Department of Revenue, and with me is Ken Ross.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee. Ken Ross, I'm Personal Income Tax Program Manager at Department of Revenue.
Today, the Department of Revenue has three policy option packages that we would like to discuss with you. First, I'll open with an overview of where we are with our core systems replacement project. Ken will go into another policy option package that complements that project that has to do with fraud analytics and detection. And then we'll invite Mike Vaughn to come up and share about our third policy option package that has to do with the property tax system initiative. As we've said, the core systems replacement project handles about two-thirds of our systems, and out of scope for the core system replacement project is some of the core work the property tax division does. And so Mike Vaughn's going to come and talk about a policy option they have to meet some of their needs. You've seen this slide before. The primary drivers of the business drivers for why we need to replace our core systems are primarily to avoid risk. This is a capital reinvestment in our infrastructure. But we're in a good place with the kind of commercial off-the-shelf solution we've purchased that we will be able to also improve performance. And I'll get into that on the next slide. Fast Enterprises is the company who has built Gentax, which is the off-the-shelf solution we've purchased. And one more click. And we've completed our first rollout successfully on time and on schedule. We're about halfway through our second rollout, which I'll talk about and give an update about in just a moment. And next slide. When it comes to the main purpose for replacing our systems, we generate about $8 billion a year in revenues. And the infrastructure that we had, which was well built by our staff, but it was built on systems that are more and more difficult to maintain. I've shared that with you in the past. We just really needed to reinvest in that infrastructure so that we could continue to support those revenue streams that we depend on. And so that was the primary business driver behind it. But as I said a moment ago, we do have opportunities to improve performance. And so four areas I'd highlight quickly. The first is to enhance compliance and revenue. We're going to be able to do some, for example, dynamic scoring as we look at the different accounts that we have to collect on to be able to make sure that our resources are focusing on the most, the highest needs for us to do our collection work. Also for audit case selection, we're going to have opportunities to make sure we're selecting the cases that are most important and most appropriate for us to focus on. With regard to increased efficiency, we're going to be able to automate a number of things that are currently done manually. With regard to filing enforcement, we will be able to automate some of the activity that people manually match data. That data matching will be done automatically. Same with some of the collection activities we have, and these are just a few examples. There's things we do manually right now that will be automated, and we'll be able to take the resources that have been doing some of that manual work and have them focus on more complex issues. With regard to improved customer service, our revenue online system, our web portal, is going to provide taxpayers and their representatives with much more access to data for most of the programs that we administer at the department. They'll even be able to log on and see an exact copy of correspondence that we've sent to them, as well as look at account balances, make payments. So we're going to be able to provide a much better customer experience with the new software and tools that we're putting in. And then finally, increased flexibility in tax administration. We're just going to have access to more information at our fingertips as we're administering our tax programs. That'll help us manage them better, have more information about how staff are performing, provide more current information on how we're performing as well.
Before you go on, you have as your second thing on the on that second part is increased efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me exactly what that will get us, that increased efficiency.
Co-Chair Riley, exactly, I don't know exactly what I would tell you. I've shared a couple of examples. For example, there's things that we do manually right now with regard to matching data from different data sets, how we're moving accounts through the system manually, and we'll have some automated workflows. We'll have automated data matching as we load files, and what will happen is we'll have resources that instead of doing that very manual labor, they'll be able to work on more complex work, address some of the compliance issues on the back end. But I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. Okay. It tells me what the people who were doing that are, you're planning for them to do.
Yes, yeah.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is apparently going on to the General Gov Subcommittee. I would very much like to see and a roughed out enterprise budget for this IT project, meaning which you know, from the day it was the idea came up, how much labor has been put into it, what's the cost of buying is going to be, what the cost of operation and maintenance is going to be, the cost benefit as far as labor savings, and again, whether you repurpose your employees for something else. This is an enterprise budget. I want to know within the scope of that project, what are we going to spend, what are we going to get for it, and what will be the ongoing cost, whether it be higher or lower, or, you know, for instance, will this be served through DAS, or will you have your own server, or will it be served by a third party, this type of thing, and what the ongoing cost will be?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, I'll actually be able to touch on most of that in this presentation in about two slides, with the exception of, I think you asked for a return on investment mm-hmm. on some of the efficiencies, and that's not something I'd be able to report on today. And we can have a further conversation about that in terms of, again, this is a capital reinvestment in our infrastructure. We're not doing this necessarily to try and have the return on investment. We need to do this, but there are some opportunities that in the 2017 session we may be able to come in once we've identified where the efficiencies have happened and offer, here's work we used to do manually. We can repurpose this work and we can do this other work, but we're planning on coming back and having a conversation. But part of the challenge is we identify these efficiencies after we've gone into production. We have an idea.
Part of my problem is providing the money before we know what's going to happen. So, you know, we need to get some idea of what you anticipate. And if someone were to come to my business with a plan and said, "Well, we'll let you know ahead of, you know, after you spend the money, we're going to tell you what happened," that's not going to get an investment. So
if you could provide that for him on his next committee, that'd be great. But you can go ahead now.
Thank you. Next slide. So for rollout one, we went live on schedule, November 12th. All of the systems, both the new system, Gentax, and then there's a lot of work that we have to do to our legacy systems, especially when you have a phased approach like we're doing. We're doing a four-year phased approach, and your legacy systems in some cases need to communicate with your new system as well as your old systems, so you're modifying your legacy systems as you go. So both our new systems and our legacy systems were functioning as we expected them to do as after we went live, and they continue to do so today. The corporation cigarette and tobacco tax programs are the programs that were in rollout one. We are under budget. All the relevant scope requirements were met for rollout one. The data that we needed to convert into the new system was converted and converted successfully. I mentioned the legacy systems. There were a few that we retired. Those were retired successfully. And the functionality in the new system has been more than adequate to meet our business needs. It's been up and running for about 6 months now. And we were successful in not doing any customization of the internal code of the Gentax solution to meet our business needs for those three programs in rollout one.
Representative Nearman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Hey, I got a couple of little questions here. So after rollout one, are you using the new data warehouse live?
Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Nierman, yes, we brought the data warehouse up in February, and we're just beginning to use that. Correct.
Can I follow? Is your data warehouse located in DAS ETS then, or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nierman, yes, all the hardware is at DAS ETS, and then the application software. So we purchased an integrated tax system, and then along with that, we purchased a data analytics tool, KXEN. It's an SAP solution, and it's integrated into the way FAST has built it into the integrated tax system. And so that's the data warehouse and the application we're using, and it's all housed at ETS.
Is that the purpose for the data warehouse? Is it for data analytics, or is it for reporting out to customers? Or am I just did those get kind of gray area and conflated there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nierman, it's for data analytics. It's to help us score accounts. It's to develop reports. Anything you can imagine using a data warehouse for, we will be using it for that, yes.
Are you doing that now? I'm trying to envision what's going on, data analytics for corporate cigarette and tobacco taxes. That this doesn't sound like all that exciting to analyze, but you might have a different take on that. So.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nierman, we are excited about analyzing our programs.
Good. I want to be on board, too.
Yeah, okay. yes, I mean, there's everything from we even have to take the data out of the system and use it in our SAS solution that our research department uses to help with economic modeling at the state economist's office and whatnot. But, yes, we're monitoring the performance of not only our receipts but how the programs are performing. There's a number of functions that the data warehouse provides.
Good. That's the kind of answer I was looking for. Thank you.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you. Earlier today in another committee, we heard testimony from the Department of Revenue regarding the cash flow from the time the money comes in and how it comes in. To, say 30% of income tax comes in checks and money orders and cash, mm-hmm. and then 70% in electronic transfers and so forth. And there appears to be, particularly in the cash and check portion of it, there appears to be a significant delay seasonally in getting that money into the Treasury interest-bearing accounts. So how will this IT upgrade help you to better move that? You know, I mean, time value of money is, when it's laying there, it's not doing anything. When it's in a Treasury account, it's making 5%. So can you give me some example of how this IT project will speed the transfer of money into an interest-bearing account?
Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, as we said, this CSR project replaces about two-thirds of our system. One part of our systems that is not being replaced by this project, but that our agency is also working at updating, or what I would call our front-end processing and banking systems. And so the activity you're talking about is going to be handled in the effort that's going on in our processing center to modernize that equipment, and that's not in scope for this. It's part of just the life cycle replacement of...
That's not part of the Gentex?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, Gentex is what you think of as your back-end processing, accounting, your collections, your audit, all the functions that we do to maintain and account for the revenues that we receive. But your data capture and your banking systems are not included in Gentex. That's in our data center. There's a different data capture software, and we have scanners that have software that image returns, and that is out of scope for Gentex. Now, Gentex does support the imaging, so when we image returns and bring them into the system, then Gentex logs them, catalogs them, has unique identifiers for them, companionates them with the accounts they belong to, and so Gentex is the environment that everybody's working in, but the actual data capture and capturing of the information is outside the scope of the core systems replacement project. And this was all in our business case. This was all laid out very, very clearly in our business case.
Would this in your new your other pop here is one of your other pops here is for your property tax upgrade, then that too would not improve the cash flow. The reason I'm talking about this is that just a little quick thumbnail sketch of the 30% of income tax that's not getting into a interest bearing account for a week would be. probably costs seasonally $250,000 a day in lost interest, on the totality of the and your property tax is only about a third of that. But I mean, we're talking about a significant amount of money in the delay in getting those processed and seasonally processed and put into an interest-bearing account.
So that really doesn't have anything to do with this POP. So maybe you could get that information to the Senator about how that's going to work out, and maybe to the rest of the committee as well. We can move on with this one. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Co-Chair. Our current rollout two, has the personal income tax, self-employed transit, estate and trusts, senior and disabled citizen deferral, and the emergency communication tax programs, or the 911 program, in this rollout. It is by far, in terms of the amount of data we're converting, our largest rollout. In terms of the number of accounts we're converting, the largest rollout. We're scheduled to go live December 1st. We're currently on schedule to meet that target. Again, our goal is to continue to adopt the Gentax solution as it comes to us, and then to the extent we need to, we will change our business processes to take advantage of the way Gentax would performs its work. At this moment, we don't see any need to do any customization for this rollout either on the horizon. That doesn't mean it won't happen down the road, but we're a large way through configuring the system, and we've actually already started testing the system for these programs, and it doesn't look like we'll be doing any customization for this rollout either, which is good news because it's easier for us to maintain and support in the long run if we can keep it as standard as possible from the vendor. And then my last comment there is, if the budget process works with the request that we have before you, which is the next slide, we look like we'll be in good shape for 15-17. Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, to the question you had a moment ago, here's a little bit of information about the budget. I'll get to the green column, which addresses the ask that we have for this biennium, but just for a little bit of background, the first 4 years that we worked on the project, starting in 2009, we spent a little over $7 million getting ready, doing our business case, doing all the effort that it takes to get ready to embark on a project like this. And we worked very closely with the Office of the CIO and the Legislative Fiscal Office during that period to get ready. Even though the stage gate process wasn't in place, we essentially met those kinds of requirements in order to gain approval in 2013. In 13-15, you can see the total that we're spending on the project, and part of that's an estimate because we still have the last 3 or 4 months that we haven't had accounted for in this biennium, is $21.4 million. $18.8 million of that is debt funded. $2 million of that was general funded. And then a little over $500,000, that top line, comes out of our agency budget. We have sunk costs in our project management office that is running the project that will stay with the Department of Revenue after this project, their agency's contribution to the project. To the ask for this biennium for 15-17, and this is based on the governor's budget, the general fund requirement that we'll have for the project is a little over $4 million. The vast majority of that is for the enterprise technology services costs. They do house the hardware, they do service the application software, and so those are our service fees for them hosting that. We also have a little over $200,000 worth of non-bond eligible services and supplies costs. And so we worked with the DAS, Chief Financial Office, to determine what costs for this project are eligible for bond financing and what costs aren't. And that $200,000 of general fund represents those costs that aren't eligible for bond financing. And then the $26.3 million, that represents the work. You can go to the next slide. $26.3 million represents all of the funding for the vendors. We have the solution provider. We have a vendor that does independent QA for us, quality assurance. We have a couple vendors that are helping us with project management, and we have a vendor who's helping us with organizational change leadership. The funding will also pay for the positions. You've given us positions throughout the life of implementing this project. We were asking for 33 positions this biennium. This is one more position than we asked for last biennium. What we discovered last biennium is the amount of effort that it takes to get your data ready to convert into the new system was enormous, and it took another full-time position just to coordinate that across the agency. And so we've asked for one more full-time position to help us with data conversion. And the breakdown, if you want to see it, for how the $26.3 million in the bond financing is spread, $11.4 million is for state staff and expenses, and $14.9 million is for all the vendors that I had just mentioned. Next slide. And this is my last slide before we turn it over to Ken. As I mentioned a moment ago, this project began before the stage gate process, but we've worked closely, like I said, with the OCIO and LFO. We've provided a lot of our foundational documentation for them to review after it's been QC reviewed by our QA firm. And we've performed all the tasks, to my knowledge, on time and met all of the needs as requested of those offices. Mm-hmm. And we continue to work, now that we're in the execution phase, by providing quarterly reports both from the department and from the QA vendor independent to the LFO office and the office of the CIO. We also have a budget note requirement from the 13th session to report semi-annually to LFO, and we've been doing that timely. That's every December and every July. And then members of the Office of the CIO and LFO come and actually observe our monthly executive steering committee meetings. And so there's a great deal of interaction still as we're executing the project with regard to oversight for the CSR project. And that's the conclusion for that.
Yeah, just ask one question. Are the 33 positions, are those temporary positions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, in essence, they are. They're given to us as permanent positions, but they will go away in the 17-19 biennium.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Nierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I want to talk about the data conversion. That seems like the pretty risky part of the project there. So if I go back to some of the earlier slides there, so you have in rollout two, you've got personal income, self-employed transit, estate and trust, senior and disabled citizen deferral. I don't know what emergency communications is, but those first four seem like pretty big bites. Do you do those all at once, or do you do them one week and then do this? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Nierman, it's a very iterative process. When you have a software solution that is already built, you're configuring it to meet your business needs. So when it comes to configuring it for payments, it's agnostic to whether it's a payment from this program or that program. But when you get into the returns that come in for the different programs, you might have different elements. So you might work on the returns for, say, the self-employed transit, and also work on the returns for the personal income tax. The same team works on those, and so you have the same people, although the program people might be different from the agency, the same people on the project team are working with returns for all the programs. So you keep the knowledge of how the system works and how returns should work, but you're bringing in subject matter experts from other areas of the agency who have the program knowledge, and you do that throughout the flow of information through the agency.
So the answer is then you're not going to do them all at the same time. You're going to do them one at a time, right? You're just saying that the skill set is used over and over again to do that. Am I wrong?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, you could look at it that way, but we don't do it end-to-end. We're doing them, we overlap.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Senator Whitsitt.
I do have just another numbers question. Are the 33 projected positions, the $11.4 million encompasses just those 33 positions?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, those positions and related expenses to those expenses, for example, facilities, you know,
it's about $175,000 a year per position is why I asked. That seems, I don't know, perhaps that's what it costs to hire someone to do those things, but that seems a little, $350,000 per biennium seems a little steep.
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, it's more than just salaries. It's all the infrastructure that takes to bring the team on board as well. It's everything except for the contractor costs. So there would be some hardware, software costs in there. They all had to have laptops or PCs. We had to rent an additional facility. We had to furnish the facility. So everything except for the services and supply costs that were not eligible for bond expenses that we pointed out as a general fund expense are included in that.
Okay.
Moving on. Again, my name is Ken Ross. I'm a personal income tax program manager for Department of Revenue. I'm going to talk a little bit about fraud detection. And we've coupled this with the CSR project because bringing Gentex on is going to allow us to look at some different tools that we can use for fraud detection. And so I'm going to give a real high-level overview, talk a little bit about fraud, talk about the growth we've seen in it, and then some strategies that we're looking at, and of course the ask that I'm here for today. So fraud used to be somebody altered their tax return, some line on their tax return or their W-2. Today it's all about identity theft. All the fraud that we're seeing, or the vast majority of it, is from stolen IDs. So somebody has a name, an address, and a social security number, and a computer, an internet access, and they file a tax return from anywhere in the world, and we see them from all over. It's becoming big business. The last year that the federal government gave out numbers, they estimated that they paid out over $5 billion in false refund claims. It's difficult to detect. Like you said, they have real information, and they follow up from wherever they follow up from. This year, we're seeing even more real information, where we have a real taxpayer's name and address. We always get that, but then we also are seeing where it comes in with a W-2 of their real employer. So it's making it very hard to detect this year. It's also difficult to recover because, like I said, we don't know who's filing a return. They may be filing it from Africa, which that happens. And so once a refund goes out the door, we are fortunate to recover it. Most times we don't. And usually where we recover the funds, and we do sometimes. Sometimes we find out about it in time to pull it back from their direct deposit. A lot of times we just get lucky because the refund offset to a debt that the real taxpayer owed to the state. And so we find out that way and are able to pull the funds back. It's also, most of our fraud work is a manual process. We spent a lot of time manually looking for these returns and then reviewing them. One of the things that the tools that we're asking for that we can couple in Gentex will automate a lot of that. It will take away the manual piece. It'll save some time. That's the one thing about fraud detection. It's time consuming. On average, last year, we were about 60 days to resolve the manual review. And the unfortunate piece of that is a lot of legitimate refunds get caught up in that process. So if we happen to look at your return because something didn't look right, it probably took us 60 days last year to get your refund to you. I said I want to talk a little bit about the growth. It has been growing. As you can see from this chart, last year, our numbers were way up. We stopped over 4,700 refund attempts last year, about $7.8 million. We paid $159,000 to the net figure of $144,000. And so a couple things on that net, because we were able to recover some of those. And I say we paid $159,000. That's what we know. The reality is we don't know how much we missed. We have no idea. This year we're getting a little bit of an insight because one of the big tax software companies has been sending us a weekly file that of returns that they flagged, Oregon returns that they flagged that look suspicious. And so we've been able to see, get more information, and we see some that we have missed because they're on that list. Through for numbers for this year, just to talk about the growth of through April 30th, we've had about 2,300 attempts, about $5.5 million that we've stopped in refunds this year. We paid out 160 net, that's 124,000. And if I compare that to last year's numbers through April 30th, 1,045 attempts, $1.5 million. So we're up $4 million through April 30th in attempts. And last year we paid just 31 for about $26,000. And again, I reiterate that we don't know what we don't stop. So just a quick update on our strategies. Of course, we have business rules in place to look for fraud. We will continue to do that. We've dedicated staff resources, and we have shifts resources around, taking them off other duties, and we will continue to do that. But specific to this policy option package, we are asking for some new tools, and one of them, part A in the original request, was integrating commercial data analytics. And this is with a company that Fast Enterprises has partnered with, Thomson Reuters. They're a big data company. They're worldwide. They're well known, so they have access to millions, billions of personal records, public information. A lot of it's public information that they compile every time you register to vote or you move or you apply for a loan. That goes into some data warehouse, and they're able to collect that. They do buy some data also. They have proprietary analytics that they design for tax refund fraud, that they'll run a tax return through their analytics, and they'll help us determine whether that's the real person filing or not. So it's really directed at the identity theft. Along with that, we would also build an identity quiz. So the process would work. So if we analyze a return and we score it, we'll give it a score on the fraud scale, 0 meaning it's true, 100 meaning it's absolutely fraud. Somewhere in there where we're not sure, we'll send a letter to the taxpayer and ask them to call us or get online and answer some identity quiz or some questions on an identity quiz to confirm who they are. So we'll build that into the data analytics. The good piece of this about this is because FAST has partnered with Thomson Reuters, this will be integrated into the system. So we'll every night when we process our thousands of returns, we'll run it through their analytics. They send it through their data center in Denver to run the analytics, and they shoot it back to us the next day. So the next day we'll be looking at a list of potentially fraud refunds. The second piece of that, part B, is we're asking for one-time money to get actually fund our partners at Employment Department to create the ability to match withholding in real time. Currently, we match withholding after the fact. In a lot of cases, withholding information isn't due now until March 31st. We're asking in this package to modify one of the employment forms that the employers have to submit quarterly to get state withholding on there, so that we can have at least 3/4 of information in our system to match against when the returns start coming in January. And the 4th quarter employment information is due January 31st, so we envision by February 15th, before we really crank up our return processing, we'll have the withholding information to be able to match what's on the return with what's reported by the employer in real time. So that takes me to the ask. We are asking for $1.1 million in general funds. That breaks down about $750,000 of that is for the Thomson Reuters analytics tool, the licenses that go with that, the identity theft quiz, and also we're looking to do a pilot project on a skip trace tool, what we call skip trace. So it's a individual lookup. So if we are individually looking to collect on a taxpayer, they owe debt, we can go out and use this tool to find a good address or something similar. So it's a one-time, it's meant to be used individually. It's not something that we would use it when we process our returns. About $360,000 of the ask is the one-time ask to modify systems at employment, and we have been in conversation with employment folks all along, and they're on board with this. It's not the reconfiguration of the form is not a big deal to them. The money really is to do the system modification so they capture the data and can send that to us quarterly. We're not asking for positions with this ask. This is solely to give us the software, the matching analytics capabilities. It does have the analytics through Thomson Reuters is an annual or annual fee, and so it's ongoing. So in the next biennium, we would be back, or we would like to build that into our budget for the future bienniums also. And obviously, this was an option negotiated in the contract with Fast Enterprises that we would ongoing cost index for inflation. And with that, I'll conclude and I'll entertain questions.
Thank you. So is the skip trace mechanism you're talking about, is that something you could also use in your debt collection part?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, yes, absolutely. And we have some tools now that we use that through another company. This would do two things. One, it would be at a lower cost, we believe, and it also would be integrated so that because it's part of Gentex, when we did that search for debt collection, the results would go into our data warehouse for future use.
Okay. The second question is Thomson Reuters something similar to SAS, or is it a different function?
Co-Chair Riley, Senator Whitsitt, I believe they do some of the same stuff where they have the analytics. I couldn't honestly compare the two companies, but they do both do that big data analytics, I believe.
Okay. Representative Nerwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I got a couple of questions. So first of all, can you put some more flesh on the bone for the modification of the Employment Department payroll system? Is that their unemployment check issuing system? And then are you doing it on their end or on your end?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nerwin, it is not part of the unemployment. Is their employer reporting piece that were the employer
to collect
is,
the employment tax.
And, okay. Right, and they're reporting their wages quarterly. And I'm sorry, what was the second piece?
Are you doing it on their end or your end?
Oh, it's on their end. So we actually, the form gets sent to us and we bank the money. They actually process the form. And so it is to modify their system to capture more information and be able to send that to us.
Okay. So on the first part there, which is the analytics thing, the appropriation for that, would you be opposed to having a budget note which would require you to report back how much money you save on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nerwin, we're not opposed to reporting. It would be difficult, I'm going to say up front, difficult to know exactly what was caught because of the analytics and what we would have caught anyhow, but we would be able to report our total results.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Thank you. So if we could go ahead and move on to the property valuation.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Vaughn. I'm the valuation manager with the Oregon Department of Revenue. The two program areas I'm responsible for is the centrally assessed program and the industrial appraisal programs. And today I'll be talking about the property valuation system, policy option package 141, or PVS. Why this is important is because, can everyone hear me? Sorry.
Good.
I'm not sure about
You're
the
good.
Distance. Okay. Why this is important is because this system supports the work that we do in valuing approximately $45 billion of property each year. That generates then locally about $500 million in tax revenue on an annual basis that funds education, public safety, local government. And the problem that we have currently is that we don't have a system. Right now, we have a cobbling, if you will, of Excel files, homegrown databases, and very paper-centric, error-prone processes. What we're looking to do is to solve the problem of the lack of integration of a system that allows us to store and centrally locate all of our appraisal data. We have no ability, because we don't, to perform any data analytics on that data. We can only analyze case by case or account by account the appraisal information on each property, whether it's industrial or centrally assessed. And we don't have an ability to communicate electronically. So the things that customers are frequently looking to do, like e-file returns, to communicate, to access information on their property, they don't have an ability to do. They actually have to call up. We have to pull a paper file. And that then allows company owners, tax reps, and then ask questions that we can engage in. So we have no ability to communicate electronically with our taxpayers. In our business case, we realized about a year and a half ago that we had an issue that we needed to solve. We have increasing accounts and decreasing staffing levels, and we're looking at increased complexity of the type of accounts that we appraise, both on the central assessment and the industrial side. We have put together a business case that looks to develop a commercial off-the-shelf product that will fully integrate the appraisal information we need to annually value the $45 billion in real market value. We want to improve our customer service to allow people to file their returns annually with the department and also communicate with us electronically in the mediums and modes that they're accustomed to with other jurisdictions. We want to identify a long-term stable IT platform that one isn't where it's cobbled together but has one central operating system that allows us then to go into that system to recall the information necessary for appraisal and also on the maintenance side. And really, this is all geared towards increasing the amount of time we spend on appraisal, which is the key here, which is what we're required to do, and not on the paper-prone process where we have to move from one file to another, Excel database, gather information, and move it to another area so that we can do our appraisal work. If everything is centrally located, we then have the ability for the appraisal staff to go in and value property more efficiently, if you will. What we're looking to achieve this is approximately $2.3 million in bonding authority. This will allow us to hire three full-time staff over the life of the project, so temporary, to just fully implement the project. This would also fund the software, the hardware needs, as well as the quality assurance. Any questions on
It doesn't look like we have any questions, so.
I'll get into the project timeline. I didn't know if there's any questions on the budget side. Okay. Okay, the timeline, this is really just a conceptual project at this point. Last summer, we completed our business mapping process, an initial high-level business case, and the policy option package to get into the governor's process. We now have a project to ensure that as we move forward, that we meet the requirements of stage gate, that we have the staff in place that will maintain the identity that we want to and the timelines that we need so that we can move this project forward. Really, once a project is approved and we get the budget authority, we're looking at in the summer of this summer of 2015 to hire the necessary staff that will then maintain the project and update and maintain all the necessary information as we move forward. That also includes the quality assurances, working with OSCIO and the LFO, and working through the vendor request for proposal process. Once we get through that and a vendor is actually selected, we anticipate needing to modify the timelines associated with retaining and implementing the project fully. So with that, are there any questions?
Representative Nierman.
So You call out the computer-assisted mass appraisal. That's your commercial off-the-shelf product, and that's the trade name of the piece of software that you're going to buy then?
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, and Representative Nierman. What it identifies, the CAMAS system or the computer mass, is more of just a identifier of what an appraisal software for this process is. It's not the name of the product. Whatever company that is selected would have you know, an identifier for that IT product.
So you don't have a piece of software picked out yet? Then you're too early in the process for that. Then,
Representative, correct. That we're too early in the process. We have we've gone through a request for information process where we had three vendors respond with the relative costs and the type of products they could offer. We are working with the 36 counties to identify what they have. Most counties have a system they currently use to maintain their accounts and work through it. So we know that there's about a half dozen vendors out there that are currently being used in those programs.
Who are your customers then? Is it the counties, or is it individual homeowners, or is it a builder, or all of the above? Or
Co-Chair's Representative Nierman, it is kind of all of the above. We do the appraisal work on behalf of the Oregon counties. We then deliver the values to the counties so that they can generate the tax bills. However, we work closely with the industry owners, the tax reps, who call up and have, you know, frequent questions about what it is we're doing. We engage with them on a case-by-case basis to go through the appraisal process. The individual taxpayers themselves will call up and have questions, and we engage with them. So this would be an ability for everybody to access information, to communicate with us electronically, as well as the counties, who then would be able to, you know, have a higher degree of confidence in the work that we're doing on behalf of them.
So how does that work then? How do you e-file? Is they submit like a XML document, or what's the physical mechanics of that then?
Co-Chair's Representative Nierman, are you talking about if we get the process or what we do currently?
Right. That's what you said. You said, yeah, right. I'm talking about, yeah, the future state. Yeah.
We would look to, so returns are required by law. So basically, much like the income tax, a taxpayer will have to file a property tax return with us that identifies all of the property that they have at their particular asset location account number, and then we would then collect that information, and that would go into the CAMA system, where we would then use that to retain access and recall the information for placing value on those asset items that we would then use to generate the values we send to the counties.
So the protocol is not really specified at this point then, right? You don't know if it's going to be an XML document or how the data transfers are.
Correct. We don't know at this point.
Way too early in the process. We need to move on, Representative, if we can
right.
do that.
Thanks.
I'm going to, thank you very much. I'm going to open a work session on the core system replacement project. You want to give us the LFO recommendation on that?
Certainly. Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, actually, we've combined two policy option packages because they are so close to one another.
Okay.
And so this would be a combined recommendation on the policy option package 181, which is the core system replacement project, and policy option package 151, which deals with the fraud analytics and detection. LFO recommends conditional approval of both policy option packages, assuming the spending authority and personnel resources are made available to the department within House Bill 5035. Specifically, we recommend that DOR continue to work closely with our office and the Office of the State CIO throughout the project's life cycle, that they continue to follow the joint stage gate review process. They've done so religiously, faithfully the entire time. That they report back to the legislature on project status in the fall of 2015. Very important for the CSR project in that believe the agency should come forward and report on project status just prior to the December rollout. So the legislature has a good feel that this project is on track. In addition to the interim committee presentation, they come back to the full Joint Committee on Ways and Means during the 2016 annual legislative session. And again, that they, as we've done with all of the requests that have come before this committee in the past, recommend that the agency utilize the Office of the State CIO's Enterprise Project and Portfolio Management System.
Okay. Representative Nathanson?
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
The recommendation is to move the motion is to move the recommendation to the General Services Subcommittee.
General Government Subcommittee,
thank you. Any discussion?
So just to be clear, this is the combined 151 and 181 then?
Correct.
Right? Okay.
Question, dollars of approximately $8 million here of per biennium of ongoing costs after this is up and running. Is that for both systems or just one?
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathanson, Senator Whitsitt, that is for the core system replacement system, Gentex. That's the ongoing costs for that. The separate ongoing costs for the fraud analytics software are also identified in the letter. That is about approximately $375,000 per year. That's an annual subscription cost.
So $750,000
per biennium.
Just off the top of your head, on the third program that we have not talking about, do you know what the ongoing cost of the third one is?
Senator Whitsitt, the ongoing cost for the property valuation system, which is a separate item that we'll discuss in work session, they're too early in the process. They don't know what system they're going to buy, and so they don't yet have ongoing costs for that.
Further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We'll move that to general government. And I'm going to close that work session, and I'm going to open a work session on the property valuation system.
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, Co-Chair Nathanson. LFO recommends incremental conditional approval of policy option package 141, again, assuming the spending authority and personnel resources are made available to the agency within House Bill 5035. With this particular request, because it's so early in its life cycle, we specifically recommend that the proposed funding for any planning activities be approved, that any remaining expenditure limitation be unscheduled by the Department of Administrative Services, and that the agency be required to request the Office of the State CIO, DAS Chief Financial Office, and LFO approval that a portion or all of the remaining unscheduled expenditure limitation be scheduled for agency use to initiate and complete project execution activities. And then we have some more specific recommendations that you all are generally familiar with from previous reports.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
The motion is to move the LFO recommendation to general government. Any discussion? Representative,
I just have one thing that this kind of, and this isn't specific to this proposal here, but we kind of have this recurring chicken and egg kind of thing where we're asked to approve a budget and to even approve a number of FTEs, and we don't know what the project is. And I suspect that, and I'll just be frank, I just don't think that this is a out of line number. I don't think the number's too high on this one, but to me, it gives me heartburn to have to approve something. I don't know what it is that I'm approving. And I kind of have this suspicion that if I approve $3 million for a project, that $3 million will get spent. And if I approve three FTEs for a project, that they'll hire three FTEs that will work the duration of the project. And I can't think that this is a very efficient process for doing this, but I'll be a yes vote, but I just have heartburn. So.
Yeah. I understand this what we're really approving is for the planning, and so to understand what we're going to do before we do the planning is probably not possible. So are there any objections? So ordered. We move that to the general government subcommittee, and we will move on. Thank you very much, gentlemen. So
Senator Riley, at this point, members of the committee, at this point, Bob Cummings and I are going to shift chairs, and the Oregon State Treasury will be next up.
So, unfortunately, they took up most of your time. So we're going to ask you to hurry through this and maybe skip them some things that aren't quite as pertinent as others.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get the presentation pulled up here.
Give us just a second, and I will give you a second to bring that up. Do you have any comments before they start?
Co-Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Bob Cummings. I'm with the LFO. I had some brief summary information, but they have it within their presentation, so I think we can save time just by going directly to their presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, Cora Parker, the finance director with the state treasurer's office. I have with me here today Nancy O'Halloran, who is our chief information officer, also for the treasurer's office. Luckily, many of you have seen major elements of this presentation at all, so I will skip very quickly through them, and I'm happy to answer any questions that may come up. In fact, I'm not even going to look at my notes, so people who are here with me may make it itchy. But again, we wanted to talk briefly about the program that these policy package requests fall within. That's the Cash Management Infrastructure and Renewal Program for the Treasurer's Office. Again, I'll give you a brief overview of our current infrastructure. We refer to that as the ugly chart. You've all seen it, and we'll look at it in a couple of different ways. The three projects themselves are the ACH Business Systems Renewal Program, or excuse me, project, the Local Government Investment Pool Business Systems Renewal Project, and then the Core Banking Business Systems Renewal Project. The first two are farther along. The last one is really in the planning stages that you just talked about with one of the DOR requests as well. And then finally, the budget request and any questions. This slide is an overview slide. I won't go into detail. Basically, Package 102 at agency request was a placeholder. We have worked throughout session and with our vendor and with LFO to identify the amount that we're replacing that with. It is just under $4.5 million other funds. Again, this is a continuous renewal program for all of our cash management infrastructure, and the three projects are being run underneath that continuous renewal program. You gave us permanent funds for that renewal program and planning funds for the first two projects during the 2013 legislative session. Again, this is what we refer to as our ugly chart. It references our cash management systems. They were a mix of purchased and internally built systems. They are all at least 16 years old, very highly integrated, time-sensitive requirements, and high security demands. The color coding within this slide, and you'll see a different version in a minute, but within this slide references those things that were custom built, commercial off the shelf, and then the custom built references are both in an old, out of date language that I think Senator Riley mentioned he'd be able to step in and help us deal with if we needed, and then the new language that we are beginning to build new systems in as we move forward. Again, I won't go through the details here, but there are a lot of risks and challenges behind each of the systems as they sit, not the least of which is increasing information security challenges for the data that flow through these systems. Here is that same picture, if you will, instead of the sort of underlying infrastructure. It's divided now into the three projects that we're bringing for you. So again, the sort of pink or red color are those systems related to the ACH program. The LGIP, Local Government Investment Pool, are in sort of the bluish color. And then the gray items are our core banking systems. Those really are the sort of third tier project for which we're really only requesting mitigation and some additional planning funds this time out. Here is a quick overview of phases one and two of the project. We put this together last session as we move forward to really give a sense of how, again, this phased approach would work and the overlap between the projects. This was all in blue as we came to you during the 2013 session. The items now in green are those items that have been completed. You can see that we actually sit now at the request for budget authority for both the LGIP and ACH projects. While the items identified there in green are not a one-for-one with the LFO stage gate process, I think there is quite a bit of overlap. They really represent many of the same things that LFO will talk to you about and make recommendation related to. Again, very quickly, business cases were completed in August of 2014, both for the ACH systems renewal project and, as you'll see a few slides from now, for the LGIP renewal project. A transform methodology was selected for each of the projects. Essentially, that means that we will move these processes outside of the four walls of Treasury, if you will. We will use a vendor to deliver the services. This reduces data security risks, removes Treasury as a single point of failure, and improves our ability, importantly, to adapt to industry stakeholder and regulatory needs, and they change quite frequently. Implementation for ACH is planned by the end of 2015. Again, we're continuing to plan right now, working through final service and product negotiation and contract activity, waiting for budget authority to move to final contracting activity. Changes to internal interfaces are being completed now. Detailed planning for onboarding of agencies to the new vendor solution is being conducted currently. Again, implementation costs for this particular project will be minimal. We're moving away from Treasury to a vendor-delivered service. There is no customization of that service. It is an off-the-shelf delivery service. It's not even anything that we are, you know, sort of installing. It's not anything that is interfaced at Treasury at all. It really is a service provided by a vendor. There will be, related to that, an increase in ongoing monthly costs to that vendor. But there will be an eventual decrease in related internal costs, and most importantly, long-term cost avoidance by not having to replace those systems and structures internally. The LGIP project is very similar. Again, the business case was completed in August of 2014. We also chose a transform methodology for many of the same reasons. There was an additional component here, and that's improvement of the user experience itself. Right now, we only have a voice response system available to our local government customers, and the new system will bring an online capacity in addition to that. Implementation here is planned for early 2016. We're in very similar stage to ACH. The difference here is that the service that we are buying and the underlying component does need to have some customization or configuration in order to maximize its use for the state of Oregon. It's a 25-year-old product that's being used throughout a variety of industries for cash management purposes, but Oregon-specific use needs to be addressed, and so the vendor will have to make some customization to the underlying product. The core banking business systems renewal project, again, this really is just planning stages. That was all of the gray. Those are the systems that essentially keep track of agency bank account information. We will work on business case development during this upcoming biennium. We'll go through all of the project management stages, charter the project, go through formal business case development. We will use a QA/QC for that, just as we did for the other business case development. We'll consider all alternatives, but it's likely that a hybrid option will also be selected here as well. Our ask includes some dollars related to ongoing risk mitigation activities here. To break down the cost, the request, $200,000 for implementation costs related to the ACH project, approximately $750,000 for ongoing biennial costs for that project. That is somewhat determinant based on volumes that agencies bring to the table, and that's constantly fluctuating, so that's a little difficult to ultimately determine in the end. But if there's not any change to volumes, this is what it would look like on an ongoing basis. For the LGIP business systems renewal project, we're asking for up to $2.2 million for implementation. That does include QA/QC costs, as well as those customization costs to the vendor. We say up to because we expect it to be significantly less due to potential cost sharing with our vendor. Our vendor recognizes that as they make those custom configuration changes to allow Oregon to use this product in a different way, that they see benefit in that and being able to also sell it to a new customer base that can use it in that same way as well. They've signaled their willingness to share costs with us, and they're going through their own internal process to determine how much of a cost share that they'll be willing to do. And then the ongoing biennial cost sharing, cost change is approximately $880,000 that we expect for this one. For core banking system, again, this is really just for business case development, $150,000. That includes QA/QC costs. And then $310,000 for what we're terming mitigating activities. That relates largely to some backfilling of positions needs with some consultant involvement, because I think you may have heard the first time we presented to you, we're dealing with retirements, some long-term retirements for people that have the expertise in areas that you just can't procure, maybe outside of the chair, that we just can't procure in the field field right now. It's not even really a matter of cost to procure them. It just is near impossible. And so we're looking at backfilling and mitigating some of those in the meantime while we plan for the core replacement.
And I am very expensive, so.
And that's the speed presentation. I'm available to answer any questions.
On your, we talked, listening to the Department of Revenue earlier today and then again this afternoon, they have a significant delay during their heavy revenue seasons in spring and the fall, particularly in when they're on monies that are collected in, revenues are collected in cash and checks and money orders and so forth. And so sometimes it takes a week or two to get their day sheets done and posted and to get the money to you. Once the money gets to Treasury, in your current system, is it just a matter of depositing it, or do you also have a delay in getting it to into an interest-bearing account?
Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Whitsitt, once the money is to us, it's to us. So, for example, when they deposit funds directly via ACH or EFT, we immediately recognize it in our accounts. And that's true. Once they have deposited a check into an account, so they've gone through all their internal administrative processes, it's immediately recognized on our books and available for deployment into the Oregon Short-Term Fund.
Okay.
Yes.
And earlier this afternoon, we were told that their new Gentax system and so forth really isn't going to help them significantly in their cash management during their heavy revenue seasons. So will your core banking system upgrades, I know that's for Treasury, but will that in any way help the Department of Revenue to improve their performance, or are they going to need an upgrade similar to yours?
Mr. Chair, Senator Whitsitt, our core, I know we both use the same terms, but our reference to core banking systems really is our centralized bank account and general ledger information. So it really is where the state has essentially one primary bank account with U.S. Bank where all agency funds flow. Mm-hmm. And there are some minor exceptions to that, but for the most part, that is true. We have to maintain separate account information for each of the agencies as if we are a bank. So that's all our core system is. So it won't, in the way that you've asked the question, address their banking issues.
Thank you.
Do you want to read us your recommendation?
Co-Chair Riley, Co-Chair Nathan, members of the committee. The LFO has got a combined recommendation on this one also. This is a single POP, three projects. Two of the projects are in progress and are ready for implementation. They've gone through the stage gate process up to stage gate three voluntarily. OST has followed that process working with LFO. The third one is a business case project, and per Representative Nierman's concern about knowing what you're going to get, they're doing a business case first for $150,000. They'll make a recommendation at that point. You'll know what you're going to get. Okay. So the recommendation that the LFO makes is
let me open a work session before you continue. Sure. I'm going to open a work session on the Oregon State Treasury POP. What is it?
102.
102. Thank you.
LFO recommends incremental conditional approval of policy option pack sheet 102, assuming the spending authority and personnel resources are made available to the Oregon State Treasury within the 2015-17 adopted budget. Specifically, the information technology, or the LFO recommends that the Oregon State Treasurer do 11 specific items. Rather than read them all out, I will first of all mention that they're split, these items. Some are for the ACH and LGIP, and some are for the core banking, which are in different places. The two most important ones for the ACH and LGIP deal with, first of all, Hittner Associates, the QA, just came back on board and did their first risk assessment and ID'd a couple of high-risk issues that need to be dealt with, and it's not uncommon. And once the QA IDs those things, the agency looks at them and puts mitigation strategies in place. They had to do with schedule and making sure that schedule was clearly defined in all elements. And the second one had to do with an ongoing problem they have of resources with respect to skill sets. And so the LFO recommends that they work, the agency work with Hittner and Associates for that. The second one has to do with the need to do a formal readiness and ability assessment. We do that on almost all major projects. We've done it on E-Court. We did it on DOR Taper, which you just saw earlier. And that is just to make a last-minute check to make sure everything's ready to go, and we will do that jointly, the LFO, and if we see any major issues, we'll deal with them there. But it's just a last-minute check before you turn the engine on to fly the airplane here. The other two important things are continue to follow the stage gate review process, particularly on core banking, and then regular report status. The balance of the items here are very similar to what you've seen in every other. It's our standard requirements for agencies with the new stage gate process and with the new portfolio management process that's in place. So the LFO is recommending funding approval for all three.
Representative Nakins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the LFO recommendation.
The motion is to move the LFO recommendation to general government. And is there any discussion? Any objection? So moved. I'm going to close the work session and close the committee hearing. That's it for close the committee hearing. That's it for discussion and